In this video, we are going to look at the limitations of ChatGPT, along with the limitations of all language models. Now, the truth is that GPT has many detractors. A lot of people, you know, really do hate on ChatGPT and the language models, calling it, stupid, or they're saying it makes mistakes, all these kinds of things. And some of that may come from fear. Some of it may come from lack of imagination, quite frankly, that they don't know how to use and get the best out of the language models. And personally, I think it has changed my life and it can change yours. And so, you know, irrespective of what other people say about it, the truth is I have used it to change my life. And so I can say with real conviction that you can do the same, okay? But that being said, there are some issues with it. And so let's take a look at some of the known issues with ChatGPT and also with these language models. So the first thing is, of course, you do need to pay to play. Now, you know, like I say, there is a free version of ChatGPT that anyone can go and use, and they've been very clear, OpenAI, that they consider their mission to get a free version of ChatGPT into as many people's hands as possible is something that is core to what they want to do. And so that is probably always going to be the case. But nonetheless, you will need to pay for a plus plan, which will give you additional chat time with the models. And then you can also actually use the models in the playground an unlimited number of times, provided that you're happy to pay for each individual chat. And so you can either get a free account, you can get a paid account where you pay like $20 a month, and then you can use it like 25 chats every 4 hours. Or you can get an API account whereby you can have unlimited chats either in the playground or over the API with the language models, but you will pay for each and every call. And so there is that inherent cost to using them that you'll need to be aware of. The second point is that the training data is not completely up to date. So both GPT and Google's Gemini models have the ability to browse the web. Anthropic's Claude model does not have the ability to browse the web. Although even then, in the case of GPT, they kind of don't browse the web in live mode. They kind of use this weird caching thing whereby they seem to have kind of a limited cache of every web page that you ask about. They don't go and actively browse and visit the web page. And so it's kind of somewhat limited, if I'm completely honest, the way that we do this. But irrespective, no matter how you look at it, the training data, the core training data that powers these models, does have a cutoff date. In some cases, it's the last few months. In other cases, it's as long ago as a year ago. And obviously, that does limit its use, in particular with things that change all the time, such as coding or with news or really with most things. You know, they do change a lot. And not having up-to-date training data does limit the usage and the use that you can get out of the models. There's also token size, which is also known as the context window. And, you know, these different models, they have different context windows. Some of them have 128,000 tokens. And by the way, one token is roughly 4 words. And so in theory, a context window of 128,000 tokens, which is what GPT-4 Omni has, for example, that would be about 500,000 words. And obviously that is an absurdly long conversation. But what I've actually found is once the token size goes beyond kind of 4,000 to 8,000 tokens, so sort of 10, 20, 30,000 words, around that point, they will start to forget things. Even if in theory they have 128,000 tokens, in practice, once you actually get to like, you know, 5, 10, 20,000 words, these very long chats, the AI kind of forgets things that happened in the middle in particular. So the token size is definitely a limitation. It's something that is going to improve a lot, I'm sure, as we get more powerful models. But, you know, generally, token size is very closely related to cost. And so when we get a GPT-5 level language model that has a million token limit, I would imagine it's going to be, you know, orders of magnitude more expensive than what we pay now. And that may, of course, limit its usage to some fairly narrow use cases. The language models also are trained on something called reinforcement learning, which basically means that they are programmed to push back on provocative words. They don't really like taking strong political opinions. They are likely to kind of create images in a very muted way. They will deliberately inject people of a broad range of demographics and ethnicities into every image that you give it. In particular, DALL-E is known to do this, even if it's completely out of context, historical context, to the type of people who would typically be seen in that particular scene. You know, there's lots of examples of quote-unquote wokeness or influence or specific direction that the model has been given to act in a certain way. And you know, I don't use any of these language models for anything political. I'm actually not really a political person. It's not something that I take a massive interest in. I'm predominantly interested in using it for my own business. But I recently did have a conversation with ChatGPT about the difference between sharks and whales, which is kind of a bit of a random esoteric conversation. And I was trying to kind of summarize the conclusion of the conversation in a pithy way. And I kind of said, you know, sharks are more stupid than whales, which I don't think is particularly loaded. I don't think it's particularly disagreeable. I think that sharks just are more stupid than whales, to be honest, based on the fact that they are fish and whales are mammals, and just based on the behavior and everything else. But GPT really pushed back. It wasn't happy with that. It refused to say that. It became quite argumentative, actually, which is why I bring this up. And so, in summary, this reinforcement learning, this kind of pushing towards a particular opinion that the language model should have, you'll find that they refuse to be opinionated when you want them to be. And yet, whenever you use provocative words, or you kind of don't want them to be opinionated, they can very often be aggressive and protective around any kind of a protected class. And so obviously there are, you know, humans that fall into protected classes. But here you can see I'm even talking about sharks. It didn't like me saying bad things about sharks, okay? And so you will, depending on the way you're using these language models, you will run into this kind of an issue. On the flip side, they can be misaligned, okay? And sometimes we can use this misalignment to our advantage. Other times the misalignment is going to work against us because they aren't really smart enough to have fully developed ethics. You know, they don't have context of situations outside of the chat window and their training data. So a lot of language models will, if you say to them, please, can you clone this website for me? Then they will refuse to. But if you show them a picture of a website and say, here is my website, help me recode it, then they will do so. And obviously, you could argue that this is an ethical failure on our part. But the point is this alignment, this ethical alignment issue is something that is definitely going to become more and more of a problem as these language models, these AIs and these agents become more powerful. One other issue you'll find is that they hallucinate. And so this is particularly a problem because of their confidence. And so they will confidently tell you things that are completely wrong. I was speaking to a developer a few weeks ago about a script that we were building. And, you know, I very often do this with developers. I'll send them like a chat that I've had with GPT and say, here's what GPT says we need to do. Here's the code. Here's the library. Go ahead and install it. And this guy actually went and started doing what GPT had told him to do. And he came back and he said, yeah, it's actually hallucinated this entire section. This doesn't exist, basically. And so I kind of Googled what GPT had said, and there was no record of it on the internet. So GPT had kind of hallucinated this entire section. This does unfortunately happen from time to time, and it can be particularly dangerous if you're a beginner. And what I actually did in this case is I fed it assumptions myself from a chat that I kind of conflated with another conversation about a different library. And instead of correcting me, it just kind of carried on with my logic, my incorrect logic. Now, luckily in my case, I had a professional developer who could, you know, set us all correct and get things done correctly. But of course, if you don't have that, it can be very dangerous when you're entirely reliant on this language model, which is so clever and yet at times so stupid, and you're just kind of blindly doing what it's telling you to do because you don't have the intellectual baggage around the subject to actually correct it. Now, there are ways around this. You can do what I like to do, and to have two on topic sheet you kind of that are important or you don't understand. I like to have both two tabs open. One is ChatGPT-4 and the second is Claude Anthropic. And anytime there's an error, I will kind of play them off against each other and I'll say, well, you know, GPT says that we do it this way. And then we'll run Claude's version and that'll fail. And I'll say, well, you know, this failed Claude. Why did it fail? And then go back to GPT and go back to Claude and kind of play them off against one another. And so there are ways around this, but the hallucination thing is something to be aware of. And then again, maybe the limitation with these language models is actually down to us rather than the language model. One issue I've actually found, funnily enough, a problem with the language models is that they actually work and they actually do what you want them to do. And let me just kind of explain what I mean by that. And so as we go through this training, you'll see that there are ways that we can use these language models, these agents, to do things that we should really not be able to do. Okay, we can use it to write books, create sales pages, make videos, and basically, for all intents and purposes, appear as, you know, an elite copywriter or an elite author or an expert in a particular topic that we actually don't know anything about. But that can actually create problems when we find ourselves in the shoes of someone who we actually aren't. And the kind of analogy I'll give you about this is Liam Neeson in the movie Taken. There's a scene where he's pretending to be a crooked cop. He's in this room with all these gangsters and, you know, he's pretending to negotiate for like something or other. And at some point they realize that he isn't who he's claiming to be. Now, of course, it's Liam Neeson in Taken, and so he handles that situation very well and kind of launches into his special forces combat skills and beats them all up and whatever. But, you know, if you don't have that, if you don't have the skills to fall back on, these language models will take you to places that you really shouldn't be. It can be a code that you can build that you should not be able to build. It can be websites that you can launch or projects you can launch, or books you can write that really you have no business doing. The language models will give you the ability to do those, but they won't give you any of the wider context that people who've naturally built those skills up will already have, okay? Another potential issue is that lower standards can make you lazy. So I would definitely not recommend using GPT or the other language models to create terrible 4 out of 10 content. We don't want to do this. We don't want to quickly create bad content. We want to take a little more time and apply some of the other skills that we're going to look at to create much better content. And I'll have a specific video on this where I'll talk about why we want to create quality content with the language models. It's not, you know, a shortcut to terrible content. It's a shortcut to better content if we know what we're doing. So I've given you some problems. There are some solutions to this. The first one I would say is we want to become very well versed and experienced in running lots and lots of chats. We want to have a chat around a particular subject or topic before we prompt. Lots and lots of chats lead to knowledge. Knowledge unlocks good prompts, and the good prompts can then be used in the agent. Okay. Secondly, we will want to look closely at agents because, apart from all the other reasons agents are great, agents are going to fix a lot of these problems. Okay. So as I continue to build and develop my agents, I believe more and more that humans in the loop will continue to be the norm. We will never remove humans entirely from the mix. We will just simply go higher and higher up in the instructions and in the way that we think about things. So everything will just become more higher order. We will become less fixated on the minutiae and on the micro tasks, and we will have agents that do all that stuff. And so it will actually be a way to increase our own agency as humans to get more done. But to do so, we're going to have to move higher and higher up the intellectual food chain. So we've, you know, looked at some of the limitations of language models that are here at the moment. These will probably reduce and also change as the models get better. But for now, they are something to be aware of. So that covers it for this video, and I'll see you in the next one.